If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.
When it says recording. There we go. Hello. Welcome to another episode of This Week in History. We are joined again with a special guest. We've got, well, I think we've had a talk about this. This is not something I know a single thing about, this episode. And I'm guessing by the name of the episode, there's not going to be that many people that know what it is. With 70% of our listeners being American, I'll give you a trigger warning now. You might not want to listen to this. You might want to switch off because it doesn't paint you in a very good light. But we've done a few like this that maybe classed as irritating to Americans. So if you want to stay and learn, we appreciate it very much. So. If you hear a noise in the background, for any of you who don't know, I live near a train line and I've just heard a train go past, so I don't know if that came out. If it did, sorry, it's 32 degrees here and I've got the windows open, so might be a bit of a tough. But welcome to the show, Dad. Welcome back. I've been looking forward to this one. So you've had this one in the bank a few weeks, so what are we talking about and what does it mean?
Well, today we are going to be... visiting a battle, all right?
Yes.
We're going to a battle.
Yes.
And we're going to be visiting a battle that's been overshadowed by later history. The battle took place in a region of the world that's been fought over numerous times throughout the past. And most recently, America.
Yes.
The United States.
Yeah.
We're talking about Vietnam.
We are, yes. Now, my history of Vietnam comes pretty much from the film We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson. That is kind of all I know. And I know one of our listeners, her husband is actually in that regiment. I don't think he was at Vietnam. He's only in his 40s, so he won't have been in Vietnam, but his regiment was from that battle scene, which was Custer's regiment. But other than that,
the 7th Cavalry.
Yeah. Other than that, I know very, very little apart from the fact that the Americans lost to basically like a pub team, essentially. other than that, I don't know anything about the war. I know we didn't get involved.
Now this may come as a bit of a surprise to you then, because... as you've said in the past,
yep,
those that don't learn from history are destined to repeat it.
Yes.
That falls into this category here.
Mm.
Okay. Now, most of the world, especially America, they know what became known in the West as the Vietnam War.
Mm.
And it began officially on the 1st of November 1955 and finally ended 20 years later on the 30th of April 1975.
Yes.
Now, the region itself refers to this period of history as the Second Indochina War. Not the Vietnam War, the Indochina War, the
Right.
second one. This podcast is about a battle that took place before 99% of Americans even knew Vietnam existed. This battle took place during the First Indochina War. So it's before the Americans even got involved. And we are
Okay.
talking about the Battle of Dien Bien Phu, and it is one of the most decisive battles in modern history. So there's your introduction.
Yes.
It's
Now we know how to
Vietnam.
pronounce it as well.
It's pre-American Vietnam War. So your American listeners will actually probably enjoy this because I know you said it doesn't treat America in a good light. The only reason it doesn't treat America in a good light is because they didn't learn from this particular battle. All right.
Yes.
So, what have we got? Well, let's go back to the 1800s. And it was a time of empires. We had the British Empire, the Ottoman, the Austrian, the Russian, the Spanish, the Chinese, and the French all had empires.
Yes, they did.
In 1914, at the start of the First World War, 85% of the world was administered by European empires.
Wow.
That's a lot. Now, over time, these empires slowly dissolved, and it can be said that most of these had disappeared before the Second World War. Some countries had tried their hardest to cling on to the past, while others, like this country, the Great Britain, relinquished their control by granting former colonies their independence. With one exception, one country fought for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd have got it anyway, but hey, hey ho, we've already covered that
Yeah.
before. With everything that happened in World War II, the French, our best friends in the world,
Yes.
did exactly the opposite. And they did their best to hold on to the past.
Yeah.
Up to the start of the Second World War, France controlled the part of the world known as Southeast Asia. This area included the modern countries of Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. But with the fall of France in 1940, that all changed. Although they were officially still administered by the French, they were administered by the French Vichy government, with concessions given to the Japanese to be able to use the ports. Okay? Now, for those unaware of the politics of the Second World War, the Vichy government was the French government that administered the Free French during the Second World War. But they did so in collaboration with the Third Reich, which made them part of the Axis powers. That is why they allowed Japan to use the ports in
Yeah.
Southeast Asia. That was until the 9th of March 1945. So, with the inevitable defeat of Germany looming, the Japanese feared that the French might rise up and attack them and take back their empire. So the Japanese decided to strike first. And on that day, they launched a military campaign that overran all the French garrisons in the region. The Japanese just took over. But their victory only lasted 2 months and 6 days. By the 15th of May 1945, the French, with American air support, had pushed the Japanese out, basically out of the area.
Yeah.
But the French did not control the country. The indigenous population did. Now, with the Japanese gone, the French were unable to take full advantage of of the situation, and this created a power vacuum. And this was filled by a group calling themselves the Viet Minh. Their leader, Ho Chi Minh, had traveled all around the world doing his best to put Indochina's case for independence, and he'd been doing this for years. He'd visited France, Britain, America. He even took part in the Versailles peace talks at the end of the First World War, all of which was geared to a view of independence for Indochina. But unfortunately, the world was a much more racist place back then, and although Ho Chi Minh was highly educated, he was totally ignored, and he was treated as completely insignificant. Still, with the Japanese gone and the French desperate to return to power, he took advantage of the power vacuum and he proclaimed Vietnam's independence. And he did this on the 2nd of September 1945. But of course, the French didn't agree with it. They didn't accept it. They didn't want to give up part of their empire. So they set about sending troops into the area to regain control of the region. Now, although the Viet Minh controlled the country, they were far more prevalent in the north, North Vietnam. And the country actually became engaged in a civil war with the French colonialists on one side and the Viet Minh on the other. Starting to sound a little bit familiar?
Just a little bit.
The French, they knew that the Viet Minh were obtaining their weapons from communist China and Russia. And intelligence suggested that these weapons were entering the region by crossing the border from neighboring Laos. The French, much like the Americans later on, didn't understand the mentality of the people or their ways. They were fighting an enemy in rice paddies and rainforests where the enemy could blend in with the local population and just disappear. It's pure guerrilla warfare. The French believed that they were vastly superior in both tactics and weaponry, and they didn't consider that an unmechanized force of peasants could take on a modern army and win.
No
This
one
is
did.
exactly the same thinking the United States had a few years later.
No one thought they were gonna win it, did they?
Well, a bunch of peasants from rice paddies taking on a full military with, aircraft, tanks, and all the weaponry that goes with it.
No.
You kind of think, yeah, but history tells us differently.
It does, yes.
There was a civil war. This has been going on for 7 years now, and it had kind of reached a sort of stalemate, with the French making zero or very little progress. So by 1953, it could be said that the war wasn't quite going very well for France.
No.
A succession of commanders had proven incapable of suppressing the insurrection of the Viet Minh, who were fighting for their already declared independence. During the previous year, 1952, the Viet Minh had taken over large parts of Laos, Vietnam's western neighbor, and they began to advance into the country using hit-and-run tactics. Now, the French were completely unable to slow the advance of the Viet Minh, who realistically only ever retreated when they ran low on ammunition. Their supply lines were their only weakness. Everything the Viet Minh had to be carried by hand on rough trails through the jungle. And by rough trails, I mean rough trails.
Yeah, it's a
You know, it
jungle, isn't it?
wasn't it's not a path, it's a trail. And it's very difficult to describe exactly what how sort of dense these jungles are, but they are extremely difficult to get through. So the French needed to change their strategy. They decided that they needed to draw out the Viet Minh, engage them in a full-pitched battle where they could destroy them once and for all. We're thinking exactly the same way as the Americans did about 20 years later.
Yeah.
So to do this, the French set up a series of fortified towns and outposts and flooded them with soldiers. This had their idea was to draw out the Viet Minh, engage them in a major battle, and defeat them. Because the French had the tanks, the aircraft, the automatic weapons and everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, one of these outposts was in the northwest of the country, close to the border with Laos. And it was in a valley called Dien Bien Phu. This was chosen as it fitted perfectly with the French planned strategy. The base would make use of an old Japanese airstrip. This would enable them to airlift soldiers to positions adjacent to the key Viet Minh supply lines that travelled through Laos. The French could easily be resupplied by using the airstrips. And this would allow them to cut off the Viet Minh soldiers fighting in Laos and force them to withdraw. The idea was to establish a redoubt in the enemy's rear, disrupt his lines, and stop the flow of arms into the country. The base would be so remote that the only way in would be the airstrip. You couldn't get there through the jungle. It had the added advantage that the Viet Minh wouldn't be able to use a mass force of sufficient size to cause the base any problems. There were no roads in the surrounding areas, only dense jungle for miles, and the Viet Minh had no air power. The base was going to be huge, and on what the French described as a hedgehog principle. You're going to ask what a hedgehog principle
Yeah, I
is
am
now.
there. Yeah, that was the next question.
I thought you might. This was a successful tactic developed by the French following their experiences at the Battle of Nha San. This was in late November, early December 1952. The basic concept is one where a defending force creates multiple mutually supporting strong points, each one capable of defending itself with the addition of being able to mount counterattacks.
Right, okay.
Each strong point is positioned in such a way that it can cover and assist in the defense of adjacent strong points. So even if the point is surrounded, it can hold its own and rely on crossfire from other points. It's a very, very similar tactic to the anti-cavalry defenses used in the 1800s. We go
Right,
back to
okay.
Waterloo and the squares.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's the similar principle. Each square would actually be a little base filled with soldiers and high firepower, and it could take on anything that came round it and surrounded it. But it would also be able to defend the adjacent ones that were a short distance away.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
That's what they call the hedgehog principle. And it worked at the Battle of Nha San. So the French decided this is the way they were going. There was a minor problem to this. The valley of Dien Bien Phu was held by the Viet Minh.
Right.
In fact, it was held by the Viet Minh's 148th Independent Infantry Regiment, which was probably one of their best.
But then their best is not like great, is it? Let's be like you're talking the best of farmers. It's not the best of. Does that make
Correct.
sense? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the French began their attack at 25 to 11 in the morning on the 20th of November 1953. And in the course of 3 days, they dropped over 9,000 airborne troops into the area.
Yeah.
The valley was cleared. The consolidation of the valley began. By early December, the French had full control of the valley and construction of the base had started. Now, under command of Colonel Christian de Castries, they began transforming the airfield into a fortress. Remember, there was a Japanese airfield there. There was a fortified headquarters in the center of the base with seven highly fortified satellite positions close by. And they named these fortified positions as Huguette to the west, Claudine to the south, Dominique to the northeast. The other positions were Anne-Marie, northwest, Beatrice to the northeast, Gabrielle to the north, and Elaine to the south. That left Isabel, and Isabel was directly south of all of those and covered a reserve airstrip that the French built. So they had two airstrips. The base was divided into three sections: the northern section, which was Anne-Marie and Gabrielle; the central section was five, which was Beatrice, Claudine, Dominique, Elaine, and Huguette; and the southern section was, like I said, the single isolated strong point of Isabelle. I call it Isabelle. The French probably call it Isabella. And the auxiliary airstrip was covered by Isabelle. Each of the stronghold was actually named after a former mistress of the commanding officer, de Castries. That's an allegation. It fits, and it does sort of fit in with the French the way they are.
Well, that's hilarious, isn't it?
Personally, I think they are the first eight letters of the alphabet. There's one letter missing.
Yeah. No, I'm going with the mistresses. It's French and it's funny.
It's typical French, so
Yeah,
it
I mean,
actually,
to be fair though, if you were gonna name something after you know, the point of a mistress is not to flaunt it. So, you know, seems a bit, well, French to do something,
just a
yeah.
little bit French. Now, the Valley of Dien Bien Phu could best be described as a large rice bowl with high, dense jungle-covered sides. Now, the French believed that the jungle was far too dense for the Viet Minh to attack in large numbers. They would only be able to attack using small arms, and there was no way to get heavy guns or anti-aircraft weapons to the site. This would enable the French to establish a main base from which they could conduct their airborne operations. Resupply could only be done via the airfield, as the surrounding forest prevented any vehicle traffic, which also meant the enemy would be severely limited in the firepower that they could use.
Yep.
The commander in charge of the Viet Minh was General Vo Nguyen Giap. Now, he was a highly capable commander, and he realized that if pressed, the French had another base north of Dien Bien Phu in the area of Lai Chow. And he thought that if he could get a battle at this Liao Chow, or Lai Chow, Lai Chow, something like that, he could beat them.
Yeah.
The French had the same idea that the fortress at Dien Bien Phu would be the perfect base to lure the Viet Minh into a full-scale battle and beat them totally. So you've got the French plan at Dien Bien Phu, and the Viet Minh have decided, we know that that place is there, but there's another one. It's about 80 miles to the north of Lai Chow.
Okay.
So the French, like, sorry, Giap, believed that an attack on Lai Chow would be a victory for the Viet Minh. And a win for the Viet Minh there would allow more arms and troops to flood into the northwest of Vietnam and go a long way for their struggle for independence.
Okay.
So with this in mind, he ordered his 316th Division to attack the French troops at Lai Chau. This happened on the 9th of December. Now, the arrival of the Viet Minh Division prompted the French to basically give up. They realized that this base was just that little bit too far away and they couldn't win.
And they've got a history of giving up, so, you know, it fits well with them.
So the French ordered the evacuation of Lai Chau to the safety of Dien Bien Phu.
Right, okay.
It didn't go very well for the French. En route, they were virtually annihilated by the Viet Minh. In fact, only 185 of the 2,100 men who left Lai Chau on the 9th of December made it to be Dien Bien Phu on the 22nd of December. So it took them 2 weeks to get 70, 80 miles through the jungle, and they lost 1,900 men.
Yeah. What's that, 95% of their men?
Yeah, I would say probably 90%.
Yeah, and that's crazy. But it does go to show how, when you're trying to explain how difficult it was to move through the forest and through the jungle, that it's taken 2 weeks to walk 80 miles or 70, 80 miles, again, proves the point of how difficult the landscape is.
This attack on the French retreat, is what they would call it, is actually covered in the film you mentioned at the start of your podcast, We Were Soldiers.
Yes. I didn't realize
it's
that,
where,
but I did
it's
realize
where
that.
The French are attacked and virtually wiped out. That's the start of Mel Gibson's We Were Soldiers. It's not very well explained that that is the situation, but that's what it was. It was the retreat from Lai Chau towards Dien Bien Phu.
Yes.
All the time that they were retreating and heading towards the main French base, the Viet Minh harassed, is probably the best word, the soldiers at Dien Bien Phu. And they weren't successful. The French had got it right. They couldn't bring any heavy weapons, so it was all hit and run. And eventually the Viet Minh stopped their attack to regroup on the 26th of January. You've got to remember that these strongholds weren't small. Beatrice, the easternmost strong point, actually comprised of three fortified positions, Beatrice 1, 2, and 3, and they were built on top of two hills.
Right.
Yeah, they're not sort of flat ground, and you can see that they are built as strong points on hills and all over the floor of the valley. The others also occupied extensive areas, and the troops that manned these bases were not new to fighting. They were World War II veterans.
Yeah.
They had a large amount of combat experience. The French felt very secure and safe in their base, despite the harassment attacks. By the end of January, the French had over 16,000 troops, 9 Bearcat fighter bomber aircraft, 10 US-24 Chaffee light tanks, along with a number of quadruple 50 caliber machine guns, all in the valley.
So they're well prepared for it.
Yeah, everything had been flown in or dropped by parachute. I mean, it didn't go quite as well planned as they liked. You know, at one point they dropped a bulldozer by parachute, landed in a rice paddy, and they couldn't use it. But in general, the creation of the base went very well. The French, expecting to engage small, lightly armed infantry, also had 60 heavy caliber artillery guns.
Yes.
But you're talking, you know, that's a serious amount of firepower on the valley floor.
Yeah.
General Dieppe, he knew exactly what he was doing. He used the vast jungle canopy as cover, and he took control of the high ground above the French base, but the French didn't know it.
Right, okay.
Over the time the French had been building and reinforcing the base, he had managed to amass 50,000 regular troops in the hills above the base. But most worrying for the French, he had also managed to transport 240 heavy artillery and anti-aircraft guns into the valley. So
Right.
what they had done is they'd broken down the guns into very small parts and walked them through the forest for hundreds of miles before setting them up in the hills around a French base. They used hundreds of men, women, and children to do the carrying along these narrow trails through the jungle. The guns were then reassembled and hidden in the high ground above the French base. They dug tunnels and arranged the guns to target the French positions. The tunnels featured a front terrace onto which the Viet Minh would pull the guns out from tunnels, fire a few shots, and then pull them back into protective cover. That was their plan. Now, the base knew an attack was coming. They also knew that they were surrounded because they'd got reports from their recon patrols. But they only thought they were facing an untrained guerrilla infantry force. Not, as it turned out, a major battle against a force with unlimited amounts of ammunition. Initially, only sporadic attacks took place in the weeks after the 26th of January. These attacks were used to gauge the French response to shelling and to range the Viet Minh's guns. Eventually, the main Viet Minh assault began at 5:30 in the evening on the 13th of March, 1954. And this was an attack on the northeast outpost, Beatrice. The base took an immediate pounding from two batteries of 105 mil howitzers, 120 millimeter mortars, 75 millimeter mounting guns, 80 to 82 and 60 millimeter mortars, along with 17 57 millimeter recoilless rifles, and they all rained these down on this single outpost. This was a major shock for the French. They had been expecting an attack, and they expected to be attacked with small arms only. Here, they were being pounded by a number of heavy artillery pieces, and the bombardment was intense. Simultaneously, probing attacks took place on the other areas of the base, preventing the nearby bases from providing the planned defensive support.
Right.
3 hours into the shelling, approximately 8:30 in the evening, a mortar shell penetrated the command bunker, killing the base's central sector commander, Lieutenant Colonel Jules Goucher, and all his command staff. His unexpected death severely affected the battle for Beatrice, and most likely the entire Battle of Dien Bien Phu. The Viet Minh followed up their artillery barrage with wave upon wave of infantry support, very similar to those attacks 40 years previous in the First World War. The hand-to-hand fighting was really bad. It was brutal. It was intense. The assault on Beatrice was constant throughout the evening, and by 1 o'clock in the morning the next day, the northeast satellite base of Beatrice had fallen to the Viet Minh. Over 300 officers and men, French officers and men, had been killed, and only 200 managed to escape to the neighbouring base at Hugo. The Viet Minh claimed that only 193 of their number were killed, and the French estimated that to be around 600, but who's, you know,
yeah,
it was it. Having captured Beatrice, the Viet Minh ceased fire for 5 hours, during which time the French launched a counterattack to retake the base. The attack was beaten back and was ultimately unsuccessful. And the Viet Minh consolidated their position before turning their attention to the next outpost, Gabriel. This was the northernmost point of Dien Bien Phu. And their method of attack was identical to that of Beatrice. Their use of heavy guns wasn't to fire en masse like the First World War. What they did was each of the Viet Minh's artillery guns selected a target and fired separately. This meant that it was highly accurate rather than a blanket bombardment.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The guns were wheeled out of the tunnels, fired a few rounds, and then withdrawn before the French could fire back. This was a shock to the defending troops. Not only were the enemy able to get heavy weapons through the jungle to the valley, but a large number of those guns were American. They were captured from the US during the Korean War, which had ended about a year previous, and to be fired on with United States ammunition was embarrassing.
Yeah, just to say the least.
Still, the French fought back, used all the guns that they had, and it was very much like the battles of the First World War, both sides pounding each other with heavy artillery, followed by an infantry coming out of the trenches, only it wasn't trenches, it was the jungle.
Yeah.
It was during this time that the main airstrip was actually put out of action. Several C-47 transport planes were destroyed on the ground, along with all but two of the Bearcat fighter bombers. Now, from then on, the only way into the valley was by parachute or the emergency airstrip down by Isabel in the south end of the valley. And that was until repairs could be made. This was a considerable problem for the French because they needed ammunition and they needed it resupplied. They'd used up 25% of all their shells on the first day. But bear in mind, we're still in the first day. Yeah. And the majority of their big guns had been put out of action. All incoming aircraft were met with a hail of anti-aircraft fire, which came up as a major shock to the French, who were unaware of the anti-aircraft batteries until they opened up.
Right. That's not very good, is it? They don't know
it's
they've
not
got
good. No. Following the loss of the base of Beatrice, the French parachuted in a pro-French Vietnamese parachute battalion to reinforce the defenders. And the Viet Minh launched their attack on Gabriel in the afternoon of the 14th of March. And throughout the day, the base was under constant bombardment from the valley sides, interspersed with infantry assaults against the defenders. French artillery rained down on the valley sides and the Viet Minh's infantry positions. The battle was really, really intense. The French could not afford to lose a second one of their bases.
Yeah.
The fighting continued into the night. Reinforcements were sent to Gabriel in the form of two companies of troops, along with a number of M24 tanks. And as dawn came on the 15th, the French launched a massive counterattack against the Viet Minh positions. The attack failed. And at 8 o'clock in the morning, Gabrielle was abandoned to the Vietnamese. Not many of the defenders managed to get out. But the Viet Minh victory came at a cost. It was estimated that they lost 2,500 killed, 7,000 wounded. And
Just
the
a
Viet
few,
Minh,
then.
and that's just for the Battle of Gabriel.
Wow.
Later that day, the commander of the French artillery at Dien Bien Phu, Lieutenant Colonel Piroth, who said, quote, "The Viet Minh artillery guns couldn't touch the base," blamed himself for the guns, French guns' inability to silence the Viet Minh's guns. He walked into his bunker and blew himself up with a hand grenade.
Right, okay.
So the artillery, the French commander in charge of the French artillery, was now deceased. Still, the French had only lost two out of their seven fortified bases, and their HQ was still intact. The main airstrip was out of action, but they're still in the fight. Secondary airstrip was still in operation. Anne-Marie was the next Viet Minh's target. Now, this particular base was manned by Thai troops. They are a Vietnamese minority. But it was also had French regulars there as well.
Yeah.
Now, for weeks prior to the main assault, the Viet Minh had been spreading leaflets telling the Thai troops that it's not their fight. And this kind of had an effect. Because on the morning of the 17th of March, under the cover of fog, the bulk of the Thais left or defected.
Right.
This left too few French legionnaires to defend the base, resulting in the base being abandoned. Those left manning the base were redeployed to Claudine. Anne-Marie fell without a fight. The French plight became even more of a concern during the next couple of weeks. Now, bearing in mind that's on the first few days, this now carries on for a couple of weeks. The
Yeah.
French suffered from a serious crisis of command. Senior officers within the garrison and the French leader in Hanoi, René Coigny, the man whose plan was the basis for the whole operation, began to feel that Dien Bien Phu's commanding officer, de Castries, was incompetent, and he was just not able to command the defence of the base. After the loss of the northern outposts, de Castries isolated himself in his bunker, basically avoiding the command and giving orders. So on the 17th of March, Coigny, in Hanoi, attempted to fly to Dien Bien Phu to take command, but his plane was actually driven off by Viet Minh anti-aircraft guns. He considered parachuting into the encircled garrison, but his staff talked him out of it.
Right.
De Castries' seclusion in his bunker, combined with his superior's inability to replace him, created a leadership vacuum in the French command. They couldn't sort themselves out. So the Viet Minh kind of knew this, and somehow they worked around it. And what they did is they didn't attack the French bases for the next 2 weeks. There were minor engagements, mainly from French reconnaissance patrols, and where they came across a little bit, a few of the enemy in the rainforest, but that was it. This lull in confrontations lasted until the 29th of March. During this lull, the noose slowly tightened around the bases. And the remaining bases, Huguette, Dominique, Claudine, Elaine, and Isabella.
Yeah.
March 27th saw the last evacuation of wounded soldiers from Dien Bien Phu. French aircraft were repeatedly coming under fire as the main airstrip was targeted by the Viet Minh artillery, and they were actually forced to stop using it. From then on, any wounded men would have to remain at the camp. The Vietnamese continued to attack the valley, and they were winning. The battle has been described by survivors as taking place in a stadium, with the Viet Minh in the stands and the French on the field, their every move visible unless it was made either at night or during the early morning fog. The last flight into Dien Bien Phu took place on the 28th of March. From then on, all supplies had to be dropped by parachute. And even so, the Viet Minh anti-aircraft fire was so effective that the French supply planes were forced to fly at a much higher altitude than they wanted, which cost thousands and thousands of parachutes to miss their target and end up in Viet Minh hands. Even the bottle of champagne dropped to mark the commander's promotion to brigadier general ended up with the Viet Minh. The French were holding out, but they did need help. The high command came up with three plans designated Operations Condor, Albatross, and Vulture. Condor was a plan to send reinforcements through the jungle to relieve the base. Albatross was the plan to get the besieged troops to actually break out and make a fighting retreat to the French lines 180 miles away in Hanoi. And finally, Vulture was to ask for international help, particularly from America, whose B-29 bombers could attack the Vietnamese positions on the valley side. Condor and Vulture were chosen. Albatross was held in reserve as a final resort. Condor would take time to organise, so a request was made to the American government for military assistance. And they decided that they would ask to borrow the B-29 bombers, put French crews in them, and attack the Vietnamese on the valley sides. Consideration was also given for tactical nuclear weapons to be included. Unfortunately, this would mean America's direct military involvement in a war that wasn't of their making.
Yeah.
There was some support in Washington for America to provide assistance, but only if other countries joined. So they would only assist with international support. Britain's Prime Minister at the time, who was Winston Churchill, was contacted with a view to creating an international coalition to help the French. Well, you know where the answer there is, don't you?
Yeah.
Britain declined to become involved, and so the US didn't. There was no US involvement. Some American pilots did fly resupply missions to Dien Bien Phu. In fact, 37 American pilots flew 682 resupply missions to Dien Bien Phu, but they were classed as civilian pilots for the civil air transport. That's an airline operated by the CIA.
Right.
But by the end of March, the French, who were still engaged in this major siege, were on the verge of defeat. The Vietnamese had managed to completely surround the bases to the north, leaving Isabella and its complement of 1,800 troops completely isolated in the south by the 30th of March. The Vietnamese now began to concentrate their attacks on Elaine and Dominique in the French right, on the French right in the east. At 1900, on the 13th of March, the Viet Minh's 312th Division captured Dominique areas 1 and 2. This left Dominique 3 as the only French position between them and the general headquarters at the centre of the base. At this point, the remaining French artillery entered the fight against incoming infantry. They set their 105mm howitzers to zero elevation and fired directly into the Viet Minh attackers. Blew holes in the advancing ranks. Another group of French soldiers near the airfield opened fire on the Viet Minh with anti-aircraft machine guns. Funnily enough, the Viet Minh retreated back into the forest. At the same time, to the south, the 316th Viet Minh Division captured Elaine 1 and half of Elaine 2 by midnight. To the west, on the French left, the attacks concentrated on Huguet. They almost succeeded in breaking through, but the French held the position, and just after midnight on the 31st of March, the French launched a counterattack against Elaine 2, and they recaptured it. That afternoon, the French command continued their attack, using every single trooper they had available. They succeeded in retaking Elaine 1 and Dominique 2. But they could only hold it for a few hours before being forced back. French forces were continually attacked throughout the day and in the evening came very close to being pushed out. But that is until the tanks arrived at the last minute to secure the base. Intense fighting continued in a similar manner over the next few nights. Repeated attempts to reinforce the French garrison by parachute drops were made, but these had to be carried out by lone planes at irregular times to avoid excessive casualties from the anti-aircraft fire. Some reinforcements did arrive, but not enough to replace the French casualties. On the 10th of April, the French attempted to retake Elaine 1, which had been lost 11 days earlier. The loss posed a significant threat to Elaine 4, and the French wanted to eliminate this threat. The dawn attack began with a short, massive artillery barrage, followed by a small unit infiltration attacks, and then mopping up operations. Elaine 1 changed hands several times that day, but by the morning, the French had control of the strong point. Due to mounting casualties, the attackers resorted to trench warfare, even resorting to tunnelling towards and under the French positions. So the Viet Minh had now gone into tunnels. Heavy fighting continued on all sides for several days, with high casualties being taken by both sides. But on the morning of the 22nd of April, the Vietnamese overran and held part of Huguet. Several French attacks during this time were extremely successful, but they didn't manage to take any of the fallen outposts. But they did inflict some serious casualties on the attacking Vietnamese with the help of the French Air Force. The morale of the Viet Minh soldiers was greatly lowered due to their massive casualties, and they had received from the French gunfire, the output that the French could put was just horrendous. They just wiped the borders of the rainforest the minute they saw or heard anything. And when you've got anti-aircraft machine guns and howitzers on the level, it's going to cause chaos.
Yeah, I can imagine.
From the 15th of May of April to the 1st of May, the French intercepted enemy radio messages which told of huge numbers of Viet Minh units refusing orders to attack. Their losses were that great. The Viet Minh prisoners in French hands said that they were told to advance or they would be shot by their own officers behind them. Worse still, the Viet Minh didn't have any medical treatment and care. Nothing's going to cause combat morale to drop. Like the knowledge of if wounded, you're not going to be cared for. It's just that the morale of the Viet Minh was unbelievably low. But they kept coming, probably through fear of getting shot by their own side. The 11th of April saw the French attempt to resupply the cut-off Huguette outpost. They were only partially successful in getting ammunition and water through, but they continued to try over the next couple of nights and finally had to give up on the 17th after suffering serious casualties. Some of the defenders in Huguette tried to make it from there to the main French force the next day. Only a few succeeded. Still, the remaining forces held out for another 4 days before succumbing to the Viet Minh. Isabelle was the next Vietnamese target. They surrounded the outpost with trenches and began digging tunnels towards the French. By the end of April, Isabelle had exhausted its water supply and was nearly out of ammunition. On the 1st of May, the Viet Minh launched devastating assaults on what was left of Elaine, Dominique, and Huguette. The French beat back the attack on Elaine, but the end was close. Fighting was extreme, close quarter, hand to hand. On the 6th of May, the attackers detonated a huge mine under Elaine. The final assault pitched 25,000 Viet Minh against 3,000 French, the 3,000 French that were capable of fighting. At 5 o'clock in the afternoon, de Castries radioed the French headquarters in Hanoi and spoke directly to Cogny. De Castries' words were, "The Viets are everywhere. The situation is very grave. The combat is confused and goes on all about. I feel that the end is approaching, but we will fight to the finish." The last radio transmission from French headquarters reported that the troops, enemy troops, were directly outside the headquarters bunker and that all positions had been overrun. The operator, his last words, "The enemy has overrun us. We're blowing up everything. Vive la France." Around 11,000, many of them wounded, marched into captivity. Less than half would return home.
What the hell?
Dien Bien Phu was a serious defeat for the French. It was the decisive battle in the Indochina War. News of Dien Bien Phu's fall was announced in France several hours after the surrender by the Prime Minister. The Archbishop of Paris ordered a mass, while radio performances were cancelled and they were replaced by solemn music. Theatres and restaurants closed, and many social engagements were cancelled as a mark of respect. Public opinion in France registered a shock that a guerrilla army had defeated a major European power. The defeat ended France's empire in Indochina. It was the end of an empire.
Crazy, isn't it?
The French lost up to 2,293 dead, 1,700 missing, 6,600 wounded, 11,700 captured. They lost 62 aircraft, 10 tanks, 167 aircraft damaged. Two American pilots were shot down. The Viet Minh casualty figures, they vary. Western historians reckon that they lost 8,000, Asian historians up to 25,000, and the Viet Minh's official figures were 13,930. The French defeat opened the way for the Americans to become involved in Vietnam because, like I said right at the beginning, the Viet Minh had claimed or declared their independence. They were using Russian and Chinese weapons initially, and then moved on to the heavier American that had been captured. And the Americans feared that communism would take over that part of the world. There are lots of other reasons why the Americans became involved, but I think the French defeat opened the way for them to do so. The Vietnamese now, and Vietnamese historians say it took 200 years for the Vietnamese to get rid of the Chinese. It took them 70 years to get rid of the French, and only 15 years to get rid of the Americans.
Just a little bit then, a little bit of difference.
It is that I've seen maps of Dien Bien Phu, the valley, and it is huge. And you've got to think they are just the battle went on for months. It ended in May. It started in December. And the French lost.
Yeah. Hey, they did well though, like the Vietnamese, when you think about how they, well, just how they fought for their own country, and it's
Yes.
but it's a complete mass. I mean, it's essentially, it's like you said, that's the end of the French Empire almost at that point. You know,
Yeah,
which is
it ended the French Empire.
And it's a battle that, you know, I think the battle itself is very interesting, and obviously the thought that the French essentially went into it thinking we're going to destroy these, you know, this is we're an advanced military against essentially farmers. I don't think there was any real fear, and it is scary when you think, like you said at the start, how history repeats itself, and how this point the Americans didn't learn from. And had they have learned from this, the Vietnam War could have been a completely different situation. But
The problem is, when you have in this sort of 1800s, you had armies that faced each other on a battlefield. The person in front of you on the other side of that field was your enemy. They were firing back at you. When you have a situation where your enemy dresses exactly the same as the surrounding population, they can act the same. They are not there en masse. They're there in twos, threes, fours. And they come in, shoot a couple of people, and go. You can't win. Because what do you do? You can't take it out on the whole population because you will be taking out civilians. But equally, if you don't take out those people, you end up with who's actually on your side and who isn't. And that is current modern warfare.
It's
You
crazy.
can't tell.
No, it's and like I said, it's, I think, like I said, this part of history is not something I know anything about, and I may have to rewatch that film just to see the retreat, because I mean, I know at the start of the film it's French,
Yeah,
but
all you see is a French column going along and being attacked and wiped out. And that's exactly what took place. What isn't explained is the fact that the French were retreating from a smaller base to the main base at Dien Bien Phu.
Yeah.
And that's where they got, and that's it was en route to that they got attacked.
I mean,
You know, 90% casualty rate in on that, and that's a retreat.
yeah. I mean,
That's
that's,
an organized thing. You, it's just crazy.
yeah, it is. And you know, like you said, it's I mean, it is typical French when you talk about how they lost their empire, was to actually lose their empire. At least we had the decency to give it back.
Well, there is that, yeah. But you know, like I said, through history, we did the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest. Essentially, it was exactly the same. You're
Yes.
fighting an enemy that can disappear and blend into the surrounding population. It's how Boudicca managed to get as far as she did.
Yeah,
Do you know?
it's an impossible
It's a
task.
theme throughout the whole of history, and countries do not learn from it.
No, and evidently the Americans didn't when they went into Vietnam. I mean, Vietnam, my knowledge, like I said, of Vietnam is very, very small. I know a little bit about when the war finished and how the American people reacted to the soldiers, which, to be fair, is the complete opposite of how Americans treat their servicemen now, or servicemen and women now.
I think probably that's the reason they
That,
treat
yeah.
their veterans so well now
Yeah.
was because they were treated so badly in the past.
Yeah. And essentially, I mean, they were treated badly because the war that they were involved in was not an American war. The Americans didn't need to get involved in it. But what people forget in a situation like that is it's not the soldiers doing the war that are the enemy. It's the government, it's the hierarchy, the politicians that are making them go to war. So, I mean, the
Yeah,
way.
but you say that, but the Second World War from the German side, they blamed the ruling classes for losing the First World War. And as a result, the Second World War came along. So it was the opposite way of thinking. So
Yeah.
I don't get my head around either of it. It's a bit
No.
beyond.
But I mean, it's the one thing I will say about the Americans is I do like how they do treat their veterans. I mean, I wish we had the same in this
Yes.
country because I mean, we just had Armed Forces Day in Cleethorpes. And it was amazing. There was, I think, 300,000 people there. I mean, you've been to Grimsby, 300,000 people on the seafront in Cleethorpes for the armed forces. I mean, is massive. It's
Yeah.
three times the amount of the size of the town. So we do have that pride, but then I mean, the Americans just seem to have a little bit more when it comes to their armed forces. So, but the Vietnam War, I mean, it's something I need to learn a little bit more about. So, anybody who wants to get in contact, anyone, especially in you, if you're in America, and you have family members who fought, or if you fought yourself, please get in contact because I would love to do a show on people's experiences in wars like that. And obviously, I know it's a bit of a sensitive subject. I've got a mate who went to Afghanistan twice, and he does not talk about anything, any of his experiences out there. So I know that a lot of it is sort of kept secret, but in a war like that, it's something I don't know very much about. So I would be intrigued if anyone listening wants to get in contact and maybe come on the show and tell us a little bit about your stories. I think that would be very, very interesting. So, but yeah, I mean, in regards to the story, not something I knew anything about. I do wonder, I mean, from the conversations we had, I actually thought it was American history. And it, 'cause the way you'd mentioned it. So I quite like that 'cause it's, even I've been a bit sort of shocked by some of this 'cause it's didn't realize it was essentially French. So, doubt there's going to be many people that even know about this, to be honest. So.
I kind of think, yeah, it's one of those battles that, I mean, in France, it was the big thing. When the defeat came, the world basically stopped. They stopped radio broadcasts. They stopped services throughout the country, and just to announce the fact that Dien Bien Phu had fallen. So, and it had gone on for a long, long time. The French were appealing for help for months, and nobody came.
Well, I think we were fed up of helping them, to be honest.
Yeah,
But
that was all just realistic that it just wasn't our fight, and
yeah.
wasn't we weren't able to help. But yeah, that's that.
But yeah, I mean, thank you for that. Thanks for the episode. I know you're pushed for time a little bit because you're off to bed. Nice and early start tomorrow morning. So
I'd start at 3 a.m. tomorrow morning.
yeah, well, I
But
appreciate that.
I've got another one in the pipeline for you.
Yeah, don't say too
So,
much about that because, again, that's another one that people aren't going to have a clue about, I don't think.
well, I kind of hope not.
No, well, I don't know anything about it other than what you've told me. So, again, that'll be a new one for me to learn. So, yeah, I appreciate that. But thank you very much for coming on the show again, Dad. And
A pleasure.
yeah, thank you everyone for listening. I say it every week, but get in contact with us. We are on Facebook, we are on This Week in History and on Facebook. Get in contact with us because we always like a little bit of feedback on these episodes. So anything you want to know or any feedback you've got, drop us a message, get it on the Facebook group. If you're not on the Facebook group, you are on Facebook. Why are you not on the Facebook group? Get yourselves over there because it's where we keep up to date with everything. So yeah, thanks for listening, guys.